All right. Well, I hope you guys have enjoyed the day. I have, because I'm a people person and I have seen everybody. But our last session is Rachel Best, and she is the Young Adult Mobilization Coordinator for Global Missions, and she is here to talk all things mission, short trips, long trips, any kind of servant heart you have for mission, she's here to address. So thank you, Rachel, for being with us.
Thank you. Well, hello, friends. Thanks for staying through the end of the day for me. Okay, so like she mentioned, my name is Rachel Best. I serve as a coordinator with Global Missions. I've been in my role for about 2.5 years. So my role is young adult mobilization, and what that really means is I help create events, resources, and relationships that help youth and young adults discover and pursue a call to missions in the Nazarene Church. So it's a very broad job. There's a lot that encompasses. There's event planning, research on Gen Z, helping NMI learn how to champion Gen Z in missions. There's a lot of things that fall under my job description. But today we're going to talk a lot about just global missions as a whole, what our missionaries do, what it takes to be a missionary, how to become a missionary, how to support missionaries. So I'm just going to go ahead and jump right in. And we're actually going to start with a quick video from one of my friends. Her name is Ashley Hoffner, and she's actually our regional personnel coordinator for all of our missionaries in South America. So that's the missionary on that region that basically manages all of the placement and assessment and needs of other missionaries. So it's a pretty significant position. She's 28, so it's pretty awesome that she's in that role, and this is her story.
My name is Ashley, and I serve as a Nazarene missionary in the South America region. When I was younger, I struggled a lot with depression, low self-esteem, and suicidal thoughts. Things were very dark for me for a while, and then a friend on my softball team invited me to her church, the Church of the Nazarene. I had always known about the Lord, but there I learned that Jesus could be my friend, that I could talk to him, and that he was where I could find my worth. I gave my life to him in 2007 at church camp. Later, I attended a Nazarene university, which was an important part of how God prepared me. I also went on several short-term missions trips. I think everyone should go on a short-term trip. God taught me so much about his heart for the world and his church. After school, I served for 3 months in a creative access area in Asia. And that's where God opened my eyes and my heart to the possibility of serving cross-culturally full-time. I thought God would send me back to that place, and I was very focused on it. But eventually I realized he was leading me somewhere else completely. I began serving with a church planting team in South America. I'm content because I know fulfilling this call is not about the place, it's about the one I'm serving. When God called me to missions, I heard a call for my entire life. It took a while to realize I didn't need to compare myself to other missionaries to know that I was the right kind of person for God to call. I could do missions because God was calling me to do it. He was the one who opened the way for me. My family was pretty concerned about the financial side when I told them I wanted to be a missionary. I trust God would provide for what I need, and I also really appreciate how Global Missions has taught me that it's possible, even while I serve as a missionary, to be wise in planning for my future. During the last 7 years in South America, I've grown especially in adaptability. The Lord is stable and constant, but missions is always changing. I've served in evangelism and church planting, Sunday school and discipleship, children's ministries, worship ministry, administrative support, and missionary recruitment. If you want to be a missionary but aren't already adaptable, you need to learn. I hardly have enough words when someone asks me about what it's like to serve in the way God called me. When I'm serving in the way God has called me to serve, everything is well with me. Even when I'm in the middle of transitions and my future is unclear, I'm still connected with the Lord. The best thing is knowing I am completely where I'm supposed to be and with those who I'm meant to be with. Being in God's will is the best thing about missions. We all have choices, and the Church of the Nazarene never wants to pressure people to do missions. But we do want to open up the opportunities and show people that it's possible. It is. It's possible. There are so many ways to serve if God is calling you to missions. I'm I'm so glad when God called me, he gave me the strength to say, here I am, send me.
Thank you. So that is just a really brief story from one of our missionaries about where she was at in life, how God called her, and then how God has used her since then. So she actually served in a creative access area in Asia in college and just had a huge heart for it, felt a draw towards it, felt a call to missions, pursued the call. The Church of the Nazarene placed her in South America, where she's been for the last 8 years serving in lots of ways, and she's actually about to head back to Asia. So, what I want to say about that is sometimes God plants something and it takes a really long time, and he might bring you to other places and use you to other places, but there's a purpose in the passion he's given you. So I just want to point that out in her story. So, and I'll highlight while we're here. So this is the Church of the Nazarene on a map. It's also the world map, and that's how big we are and all the places we are. But this is how we organize the world. And so you'll see this and hear this in a lot of what I'll talk about. But we have six world regions that we've kind of divided the world into. So there's USA, Canada. That's where we are. It's just the US and Canada. It is primarily English speaking, with Spanish becoming a strong secondary language. We have Mesoamerica, that's the Caribbean, kind of all the way through there, and a couple countries in the top of South America, that's primarily Spanish speaking, but there is some Haitian Creole and stuff like that in there as well. And then the Caribbean is English speaking. We have South America, that's Spanish and Portuguese speaking. Then we have Africa, and there's hundreds of languages spoken in Africa. And then we have Eurasia, that is covering Europe and a portion of Asia, so it's a super diverse region. If you think about the differences of the culture in the UK to the Middle East, that's all in that region. And then we also have Asia Pacific, that's also a super diverse region. So lots of diversity on that half of the world, tons of cultures in each of our world regions. But when we talk about missions in the Church of the Nazarene, we are organized through these regions. So our missionaries serve on a region, they serve a region. So that's kind of some of the language I'll be using today. So I want to talk a little bit about the numbers of the Church of the Nazarene. So these are our 2022 statistics that I'm about to go through. But these are the numbers of participants we have and churches we have in the Church of the Nazarene in 2022. So I want to highlight real quick the clergy numbers. So in Africa, we have about 5,000 clergy, and we have almost triple that churches. So if you do the math there, we actually don't have enough pastors in Africa for the number of churches we have. So here, we're pretty used to churches that have a lead pastor and then maybe associates or volunteers or a youth pastor. They are rapidly trying to develop people who have a call to ministry, and a lot of our missionaries actually currently are going to Africa to train people who have a call to ministry to equip them to step into those churches. So God is doing a lot on the African continent. You guys have probably heard the statistics about how the global church, not even Nazarene, but as a whole, is declining in North America, and that is true. Church participation in Christianity is declining, but it is rapidly growing in the global South. So South America and Africa are completely reversing what we're seeing in our world areas. So I just want to say that when it gets discouraging, know that God is moving in the world. It just might not be so obvious where we are right now in some of those ways. But Asia Pacific has a couple thousand churches. Eurasia has close to that. Mesoamerica has a strong presence. South America has a strong presence of ministers. And then, as you see, USA and Canada, we have a lot of clergy members on our region. And this is the total number of churches. So we have a lot of Nazarene churches globally. And these are all officially registered Nazarene churches. So these are credible Nazarene churches. So. And then our missionaries, so most of the time we have around 500 missionaries on the field. So that's every individual, so that's not counting children or dependents who are on the field. Our numbers used to be close to 700 before COVID, and they went down really low for a while because so many missionaries had to come home or were on furlough or deputation. And so they're continuing to climb back up after that. So every year since kind of restrictions have been lifted, we've seen an increase. And then on average, we have about 300 to 400 missionary kids. So missionary families are something we're really passionate about in global missions. We want to make sure that we're caring for the kids well who are going on the mission field. And people ask us a lot, they're like, hey, is it better to be single as a missionary? Is it better to be married? Is it better to have kids? Can you go with kids? And the real answer is God can use you in each of those spaces of life in unique ways. And so some people are concerned about bringing their kids to the mission field. Being able to have your kids make friends at school and all of those things are real relational connections that are really valuable and that can invite you into other spaces. But at the same time, going single gives you the availability and flexibility to move around more and have different responsibilities. So I just say that to say any season of life that God calls you in can be utilized well on the mission field. And then we have missionaries from 63 world areas and serving in 91 countries. So our church is truly a global church, and Global Missions truly sends globally and works globally. And these are the regions that our missionaries come from. So obviously we have a really high presence of missionaries from USA and Canada, but we also have a lot of missionaries from Africa and South America. Fun fact, Brazil is our second biggest sending country. They have a really large missions culture as a country in general. And so we have a lot of missionaries that come out of Brazil. We've really developed our mobilization out of South America and Mesoamerica in the last 10 years. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Scott and Emily Armstrong. They do a lot of preaching and teaching, but they've really built up mobilization out of Mesoamerica and have some church planting initiatives that have really grown that in Mesoamerica as well. And then this is where our missionaries serve. So we have a small presence in USA, Canada. In USA, Canada, we have a much stronger church and clergy presence, so we have less missionaries here because we have that strong district development here. But we do have all of these other missionaries in other world areas. So the role of a missionary is to create an environment in which an authentic local church can mature and flourish. So when we talk about missionaries and what they do, there's so many things they'll do, and we'll touch on that briefly later, but the heart of it is to develop disciples and empower the local church. So our missionaries go into a world area, and unless they're what we call pioneering, which is when you go into a world area that either doesn't have the church or doesn't have the Nazarene church, the rest of our missionaries go in, and everything they do is to support the local ministries that are already there. And that looks a lot different in different spaces. But the goal is to build up the work that God is already doing there and the leaders that are already there. But then we have pioneering ministries, and that's what you think of when you think of people going to the bush of Africa and they're totally by themselves and there's no one been there before, or church planting even in countries that just don't have a strong church presence. So those are some of the different ways missionaries can serve. So oftentimes people have interest in being a missionary, and it's really easy when you have interest in being a missionary to think of all the reasons why you shouldn't be a missionary. You think of Moses' story when God called him and he was like, I'm not the right person for this. Like, I'm actually, like, I have weaknesses and it's not me. But really, God can equip anyone he calls, but there are things that we've identified as global missions, as specific qualities that successful missionaries have or develop. And before I start going over all of these, if this was on a test, which we don't give, it's for self-reflection, but if it was on a test, nobody would get 100%. Nobody is perfect in all of these ways. Jesus is the only person that would meet that. But it is a good rubric and guideline of, hey, maybe here are some areas that I'm really strong. Maybe these are some things I can develop more. So that's kind of the purpose of these, is just to point out areas for growth and strength and kind of team building from there. Oh. Sorry, I thought. Okay, here we go. Okay, so the first one is spiritual maturity. So when we do interviews with missionaries and we talk to missionaries who have served on the field for a long time, who have been really successful, one of the first things that it comes back to in their success is they had a really strong relationship with Jesus and spiritual disciplines before they left. Because the reality is cross-cultural living is exciting and fun and also can be really stressful, especially in your first couple years, especially depending on what culture you're going into, what culture you come from, how easy that transition is. And life in missions, like Ashley said, is just a lot of change, and there's a lot of adaptability needed. And so really our missionaries who are the most successful are the ones who their commitment is to the person who called them, not to the vocation they're called into, and who that's really a priority in their life. So I work with young people, so I tell them, you know, they're like, how do I develop? And we have all these things we tell them. And one of the big ones is prioritize your prayer life, prioritize your time in the Word, learn sound theology, kind of all of these things. So spiritual maturity is really important. And then clarity of call. And I'll say with this, we'll talk a little more about calling later, but everybody's calling looks different. Even if you look at the Bible, there's not one set way that God calls or that people sense or feel a call. But it is important for you to know, God asked me to be here. And the here might be just to be available and to go where the church asks you to go. But it is important for you to have that within yourself so that when you miss home and when days get hard and when in like any space of life, relationships are challenging, you kind of have that confidence of, I know I'm supposed to be here. And then relationship management. Missions is about relationships. It takes a lot of different methods of how that is played out, but just like here, we have to have solid relationships in our workplaces, in our family, in our churches. That's all the same when you move abroad. So missionaries have to be strong relationally, and we talk about even with this, knowing how to reconcile, knowing how to have healthy conflict, being respectful in those spaces. Just emotional health in relationships is important for missionaries. And then holistic wellness. There is an element of this of physical health, especially from the US. We have resources here that aren't necessarily in other world areas. But this is also mental health, spiritual health, just making sure that you're in a healthy space as a whole to be giving well in a way that's healthy for you and the people you're serving. And then cross-cultural experience and adaptability. So we often have people who come through and they express an interest in missions. And one of our first questions we ask is, have you been outside of the United States? Because sometimes it's really easy to think we really want to do something and then we do it and we're like, that wasn't really what I thought it was. And so we recommend people, actually, we rarely send someone who's not left the US. We almost always recommend, hey, go on a working witness trip. If you still feel this way after, you know, come back. Just because we would rather people discern that before they make that commitment and, you know, move their whole life. But also those working witness trips, if you know you have an interest in missions, maybe if you're not ready to go right now, but you know it's after you graduate college or after you're done with some family responsibilities, each of those trips builds up a skill set in you of cross-cultural intelligence and awareness that can equip you for missions later. And it can also equip you in your home communities as well. We all live in communities that have diverse populations, and so these skill sets that you might learn on working witness trips can also be applied in your local church and ministries too. And then church involvement. Sometimes people come through our process and they're like, oh, I wanna like lead a church in another country. And we're like, okay, what do you do at your local church? And they're like, oh, I just attend. And we're like, so you might not know how to lead a church in another country if you have no skill set of that. So we just always encourage people, if you're wanting to go with the Church of the Nazarene, it's really great to just be serving already in your local church, to already have that character and skill set within yourself, and then you can transition that easily into other world areas. But even, you know, if you know that your interest is to serve as a pastor in other places, start pastoring here in whatever capacity you can, even if it's not with the title. But just learn some of the things that go with that. Take that initiative to learn how to order a service or what communion looks like or any of those kinds of things. And then professional development. So there are lots of skill sets that can open doors for you in missions. And this also goes along with education, so I'll kind of wrap these two into one. But people that have the ability to teach, that have certifications, that gets you into world areas that we cannot send you as a missionary saying you're a missionary. But it's also beyond that. It's auto repairs, or we have a missionary right now who connects with people through yoga classes. Like, it's so many things, but just having something that is tangible that you can connect with people on can be really helpful. And we do have lots of missionaries that serve the local church, that serve the global church, and that is their tangible thing, and that's fine as well. But it is important to have that professional development, whatever sphere it's in, that you have a skill you can take to use tangibly. And then educational preparation, like I just mentioned, specifically some degrees and certifications, you know, teaching, nursing, lots of different things like that really can open amazing doors for you of real needs, but also places that we don't have the church yet. And so those can be really awesome opportunities that God uses. And then theological coherence, we just want to make sure that people who go into missions know why they believe what they believe, know what the Church of the Nazarene believes, and can kind of speak for that when they need to. And then mission, evangelism, foundation. So we just want folks who go to have cultural sensitivity and understanding the heart of God for missions. So when we go into a culture, we go to serve and to love, and we want to do that in a way that reflects Christ and in a way that is healthy and respectful. And so this is just people who understand the heart of God for missions, understand what the Bible says about missions, understanding how to do that well. And that's something that you learn. That's not something that you necessarily have on day one, but it's important to have that background and that conviction also of God's call to go and reach others. And then global perspective. If you've spent much time in another culture, you'll learn very quickly that your skill set, your values, and the way you see the world is one way to see the world, and there are hundreds of others. And so we talk about this a lot. You know, you've probably heard in the U.S. like honor shame cultures and lots of different dynamics of culture. But this is really recognizing that a humility is required to love people well who come from a different mindset of you. And there's so much you can learn as well from people of other cultures, from food to language to compassion. There's a lot you can learn from people in other cultures. And then financial responsibility. So our missionaries serve and they do deputation, and that funds them in missions. And it's just important that you know how to manage a budget, you know how to kind of structure those things in your own life so you can be successful on the mission field. So we're gonna pause here actually and do a little activity. I'm just gonna have you turn to someone next to you and talk about which one of these stuck out to you the most for just a couple minutes and why. All right, start to wrap up your conversation. Okay, so we're gonna move on to talk about what missionaries do. So I'm actually gonna ask for some crowd participation here. I'm gonna stand on this side. What do you think these missionaries are doing? Yes, that is the baseline. Yeah, so we actually, particularly in Europe, where the church is not really a popular place to be, some of our ministries that are the most successful are ministries that are finding creative ways to engage people. And so we actually have a couple of coffee shop ministries in Europe. We have one in Amsterdam, we have one in London, and this is from one of those, and it's the church being present in the community in a unique way, and it's actually really successful in all of our locations in Europe that have this. So our missionaries, we literally have missionary positions, you could probably see them right now on our website, that are like barista. Like that is their missionary job, is to go be a barista in London. So missionaries do a lot of different things. All right, what does this look like to you guys? There you go. Yes, so a lot of what our missionaries do in building up the local church is literally building up the local church. But it can also be working on a school or a pastor's home or a park or whatever that community and church has identified as a need. So our working witness coordinators, we have these on most fields and in each region, actually just coordinate the teams that come in and support these projects. So if you've ever been on a working witness trip, there was probably missionaries who hosted you, and their full-time assignment is to host teams teams and to connect churches in other parts of the world to the needs there and the projects there and to build those partnerships. So a lot of our Working Witness people are really gifted in organization. It takes a lot to organize those kinds of events. If you've ever been on one or you've ever led one from the state side, you know that. But then they also have other skill sets often. So we have Working Witness coordinators who focus on business. A lot of them focus on construction. That skill set is really helpful to help these teams execute those projects. And our Working Witness teams, which is now called Nazarene Mission Teams, do a lot else outside of construction, but that is a big focus of theirs. And then what does this look like? Yes, so Jesus Film, we have a large operation in the Church of the Nazarene called Jesus Film, and it's a film that we have in dozens and dozens of languages that we take to different world areas and play, and it's a really great evangelistic tool that is really well received in particularly the Global South. So we have missionaries and leaders that their job is to transport that film and to have conversations with people and connect people to the local church after and facilitate all of that. What does this look like? Yes. Yes, when you know the place. Yes, so we have multiple Nazarene hospitals, medical clinics, and medical facilities around the world. So Papua New Guinea is our biggest one. We have surgeons there. We have all sorts of doctors and specialties there. But like right now, we have a missionary posting for an occupational therapist in Tonga. Like we have missionaries who do all sorts of things at these different facilities all around the world. We are always in need of general medical staff, so nurses, anything like that, to help staff these facilities. And then what does this look like? Yes, so some of you probably heard me. Yes, so the Church of the Nazarene has 51 institutions, educational institutions all around the world. So those range from graduate level, think Olivet, MNU, Africa Nazarene, Korea Nazarene, all the way to elementary schools. So we have tons of Nazarene educational institutions, and we fill lots of them with local teachers, but also lots of them with teachers who are missionaries. And then there's the other side of we are able to send English teachers into many countries of the world that we couldn't just send a missionary into. So we've been able to stay in very creative and sensitive areas where a lot of other missions agencies have not been able to because of particularly teaching English. It doesn't have to be English, but that is one that, in a lot of those countries, you don't even have to have a degree in it to go teach English as long as you're a fluent English speaker. So that's a pretty awesome opportunity that we have as well. So I just talked about education, and then our biggest need as missionaries might surprise you, but we are always in desperate need for finance people. So for every event that you go to, like this weekend, there's somebody who counted the cost of how much the food and the building and the pamphlets and everything else and the speakers was going to cost. And if you think about our global church and all the functions we have in all of our local churches, there are people who keep track of all of that and help connect the funding to the churches and World Evangelism Fund and all of those things. So we have local finance coordinators, we have field finance coordinators on every field, we have regional finance coordinators. So people don't often think of missionaries as finance coordinators, but people who are administratively gifted, who care about finances and those details, are really needed in missions. And then we have church planting and clergy development. This is what you think of when you think of traditional church planting, and I kind of already highlighted that. But then it's also clergy development, and that's kind of what I talked about of a lot of what our work is in Africa right now, is raising up ministers and helping educate them. And then compassionate ministries. Compassionate ministries has tons of different type of work they do. We have domestic violence shelters globally. We have child development centers. So that's centers that NCM runs, which is part of Global Missions, that gives food and education and care to young children who are either not getting that at home or come from impoverished communities or any of that type of thing. We also then are able to teach them the Bible and about faith and provide a safe space. So that's a really beautiful ministry that we have. But Compassionate Ministries does all sorts of stuff. They do clean water irrigation systems and really anything you could think of that would fall under that, Compassionate Ministries has a hand in. And then we have communication and creative arts. So we actually have missionaries who serve as journalists. So their job is to document what's happening in their context or in their region. And then we also have like creative access missionaries who do a variety of that as well and can frame that in a way that we can share. So missionaries who are really gifted with telling stories, creating things that the local church can hear and give to. And then we have creative arts, and this is all sorts of things. This is worship, but it's also things like graphic design. We actually have missionaries who their full-time assignment is to do graphic design for their region or the church. We have healthcare, which I've talked about. We have Work and Witness. And then Third Space Ministries is kind of that coffee shop type of ministry that I highlighted. So we have missionaries who serve in places like coffee shops or yoga studios, or we have a missionary who does badminton. So it's really just this idea of connecting with people in spaces they already are. So oftentimes in the church, we invite people in, and there is beauty and value in that, but it's about going out in daily life spaces to connect with them in those other spaces. And then we have IT, and I think your district maybe supports an IT missionary? Yes. So he's a great example of, he like went to APNTS this year on a missions trip to replace all their servers and brought a whole team with them. And that was a really big need that APNTS had. So I say all of this to say, missionaries can serve in a wide variety of opportunities. A lot of times we think a missionary is one thing, but really the Bible tells us that we're all called to serve with the gifts we have. And the gifts we have can be a really wide variety, and they can all benefit the church. So I want to highlight this website that we have, and I will give you guys a little, this thing over here in the corner before you leave, but a lot of times folks are like, oh, what do your missionaries do? What opportunities do you have? And the opportunities that we have are all listed actually on our website. So if you go to our website, like right now, you can click on Mesoamerica, and you can see what those five postings are. So you might see pastor, church planter, youth development coordinator, anything else South America or Mesoamerica needs. And you can also filter your search. And so you can go on there and you can click with those side boxes and click how many months you're looking for. So if you're interested in missions or you have a summer to give but you're not ready to go full time, you don't feel called to go full time, you can actually go on there and look for what opportunities we have for 2 to 3 months. And you can pursue those opportunities and apply for that as well. So we have a wide range of options on there. And then you can also filter through the types of ministries. So if you're really passionate about children's ministry, you can click that and it'll pull up and show you all of our children's ministry positions. And I like to tell people with this, just because it's not on the website doesn't mean that we wouldn't have a position or wouldn't create a position for you if you were approved and felt called and went through the process. And so go ahead and apply if you're interested. That's not a commitment saying you're going. It's saying I want to explore this. And it gives us a chance to explore that with you, see what you're interested in, what your call is, kind of look at all of that. I'm going to skip through all these again. All right, so I want to talk a little bit about the types of ways that we experience a call to missions, because I think a lot of times we think about a call to missions like the burning bush moment. And Moses was very much so called through the burning bush. It was very clear. It was this extraordinary moment that God curated for the sole purpose of calling Moses. However, we see tons of examples in the Bible and in our own lives of people who are led to things and called to things that they don't have a lightning strike moment or a billboard moment where God says, I'm calling you now. The call can look like a lot of different things. And actually, statistically, 20 years ago, the vast majority of missionaries in the Church of the Nazarene said their calling was a burning bush type moment. It was a lightning strike. God is calling me. I know this. And now, less than 20% of our missionaries say that that's how they're experiencing their call. So even in some generational shifts, the way that we're discerning where God is leading us is different than it used to be. So the second one that we talk about is the here I am, send me call. So we all probably know that verse in Isaiah. And when you actually look at that, God just says, who will go? And Isaiah says, I'll go. And so it wasn't like God was saying, Isaiah, I'm telling you, you have to go. It was just a willingness and an availability to say, here I am, I'll go if you want me to. And this makes me think of, we have a couple of missionaries, Robin and Carlos in South America. And they're amazing. They've been in South America for like 20 years. And when I first interviewed Robin for some of my research, I was like, okay, so when were you called? How are you called? These are the questions I asked everybody. And she actually said, I was never called to missions. Like, she just said that. She said, I was called to serve, and it's taken us to all these places, but I still can't say I was called to missions. And I've been a missionary for 20 years, and she's been a very successful missionary for 20 years. So sometimes the call is just a willingness to go and walk through the doors that God has put in front of you. And then the third type that we talk about is just truly being created for something. So maybe you haven't had a burning bush moment, but your entire skill set just obviously aligns with an opportunity. And so I think about, you know, sometimes we have people who hear about missions and hear about, you know, a specific need, like some of the ones I talked about, and they're like, wow, you know, like, I actually really could fill that. And so sometimes it's just knowing this is something you have. And I think part of the third and fourth one here that we talk about is kind of naturally having a cultural intelligence. So some people are just really drawn to culture and drawn to languages and drawn to learning about people from other cultures. And I think that is a big part of the missions call that is a little harder to identify as a call, but can be a really good indicator of God moving or calling you in some ways. And then the fourth one is just passions and interests. So I'll just tell you my story where I would say I land on this. So growing up, first of all, I came from a family that was very involved in missions. My grandparents, my great grandparents actually were the second Nazarene missionaries ever. So I grew up in an environment that talked about missions a lot. But then when I was growing up, when we would like go get movies for breaks, I would get movies that talked about like the geography of different world areas. And like, I just always had an interest in culture, history, languages. And then as I got into high school, my church started doing missions trips, and I just connected with God a lot through those. And it wasn't even just that my relationship with God was growing because I had a strong faith outside of those, but I saw his heart for the people we were serving. So I had all of these different experiences, and ultimately my call to mission was all of these different things kind of compiling throughout my life. It was a life history of all of these things. And everything that God asked me to do kept being like mission oriented. Like all of my college summers, I was like, God, what do you want me to do? And like every summer it was a missions trip to some world area. And my internships in college were very missional, and it was just all the things that he invited me to do were all along those lines. And like, I spent 2 years in college interning with an organization that fought human trafficking, and they worked globally and locally. And I was a pastoral ministry student. That wasn't my wheelhouse, but it was where I felt like God was asking me to be. So I say that to say, I had all of these passions and all of these interests, and it wasn't until like a couple years ago that I felt like God super said, like, I made you for this. Like, this wasn't an accident that you've had all of these things. So I say that to say, sometimes the call is really obvious and clear, and sometimes God's guidance is a little more subtle. So I'm going to give you a couple minutes here to just check in with each other and reflect on that kind of calling statement. And just in general, what resonates with you about that? What sticks out to you about that?
I don't know.
So did you guys serve at P&G or Working Witness Trips or?
Well, we went.
We were intermittent.
We were short term.
Oh, okay. Very nice.
For 2 and 3 months at a time.
Yeah. Yeah, so you know what I'm talking about with 2 or 3 months.
Oh, yeah, we knew exactly what that was.
Yeah, I didn't know what one because.
Yeah. All right, go ahead and wrap up your conversation. So I want to say with all of this too, I've talked a lot about what our missionaries do. I've talked a lot about how to experience a call, but all of this is really helpful info for just being a faithful member of your local church too. Because each of our local churches support missionaries. We support all these 500 missionaries that go. And this helps you understand their realities. It helps us understand what the Church of the Nazarene is doing around the world. Like, we're doing some really amazing things, actually, and some really creative ministries. So it helps us lead NMI. It helps us in all of these different spaces, even if you personally don't necessarily feel like you're called to global missions. It helps you support those who are with your generosity, with your prayer, with your understanding. So a lot of times we talk about this kind of stuff with pastors, and it's just helpful for them to know if someone in their church is like, hey, I think God might be calling me. Like, these are helpful things for leaders to know to be able to navigate those conversations as well and to point them in the right direction. So, beginning your journey to becoming a missionary, again, if this is helpful for you, that's great. But if not, maybe just tuck this away as maybe someday your child or somebody in your church might express, hey, I think God's calling me, and God might use you to help point them in the right direction. So you can start your journey by going to our website there. You can also send us an email if you're interested. But that website, and we have that in the books that I'll give you at the end, but it shows all of our opportunities. It's our application page. It's really the first place to start any of your process. And I want to say with the application, like I mentioned, when you apply, you're saying, I want to explore this more and I'm interested. You're not necessarily saying, I'm for sure going. It doesn't mean you have a placement. It's starting that process. And so I encourage people, you know, if you're thinking you have a call, but you're really wanting to explore more, it's a good place to start. We also have a weekend that we call Explore in the U.S. And so we bring together people who are in the process and we do training and assessment. And that honestly is a really discerning time for us as global missions to evaluate if you're in the right space or we feel like, you know, you're ready to be a missionary. But it's also a really discerning time for those who are attending, learning more about global missions, meeting with missionaries, learning about life and missions, being presented with real situations and case studies. It's a really good time for people to really evaluate and pray through themselves, is this where I feel like God is leading me? So then you move from application to approval, and there's a lot of steps in there. It involves your local church giving you a recommendation. There's various things in there, but that's a process that you'll go through filling out various forms for us. And then ultimately, if you get approved, then it's placement on the field, deputation fundraising. One of the great things about the Church of the Nazarene is we have a great structure for funding our missionaries. We do an event called Missio Nexus every year where we get together with all the other big missions agencies. And one of the things we consistently hear other agencies say to us is, wow, that's so amazing that you have funding from your local churches. Because a lot of mission agencies, they have to totally fundraise and they don't have a structure to use. And so it's really amazing that our local churches support our missionaries and they have that financial support from our churches. And then this is my email if you want to shoot me an email, and that's our general send me email. But I want to give you guys a case study first for you to discuss. So this is a real situation that's always fun to see what people would think and say and do in. So we had missionaries in Southeast Asia, and they had two little kids, and they were Caucasian Americans. And in the country that they were in, there was just not a lot of people that looked like them. Like, there just wasn't. And so they were kind of an anomaly in their village and in their context. And so they kind of got used to the whole, like, people just, like, stopping and staring because they just looked really different. And it was kind of uncomfortable, but they kind of got used to it. So they actually did university ministry. They were some of those people who taught English and were able to get access to different spaces. And as they started to really grow these closer relationships with these students, their kind of culture would be to invite them into their home. Kind of, that's part of our discipleship process normally, is we bring people into our homes in our context. And so they did that and quickly recognized, oh, what we expect when we invite someone into our home is not what they expect. So they learned that in the context they were serving in, there's so many people and homes are so small that hospitality is really not a part of that culture in the way that we would think. We don't have homes that can host big parties. That's just not a thing. You meet in public spaces. And so being invited into someone's home was a huge honor. And it was like showing that you really value this person and also that you like really want to like share your life with them. And so they invited these students into their home, and these students came and just started like opening every door and drawer, and like, and this is like actually what happened. And the thing is, like, that invitation to them was like, we want to fully invite you into our life. And so, and that was their culture, and that's an example of culture shock for you. But they had two young kids, they're a married couple, and they were not prepared for that. And so they were like, what do we do? Like, we're like, I don't really know if I want them, like, you know, looking through my kids' clothing drawers. Like, that's a little, like, anyways. And so they wrestled through how to navigate that, and I'll put in here, this was a honor-shame culture, and a culture that didn't that had indirect communication, not direct communication. And so, whereas here, some of us might be comfortable just being like, hey, actually, can we just like hang in here? That would have a lot different social and emotional and relational implications there. So I'm gonna give you guys like 5 minutes. If you wanna get in groups of like five and talk about how you would actually handle that. And then we'll have one person from your group share your solution. Go ahead and give these to you guys, one for each of you. One for each of you guys there. Yep. There's one for each of you guys. Here you go. I guess you already got one. Are you loaded on these already?
I do have a couple.
I figured probably. Here you go.
Oh, thanks.
One for each of you.
I have one. I need one.
All right. There you go. Here's one for everyone.
And
It goes far.
All right, so go ahead and settle on how your group would handle it, and then appoint somebody to represent your group. All right, let's circle back. We're going to start with this group right here. If you could just stand up and just briefly explain and maybe try to talk loud so everyone can hear you.
We decided that we just let them do it because, I mean, we have nothing to hide, so might as well just let them do it. Welcome them in.
All right, you guys.
Okay, our group had two different theories. One was to just lead the tour. Right? Like, here, let me show you this too. And the other idea was like redirect. Like, start throwing that food together and make it a plate and build drinks and stuff like that. So, not so in your face, stop doing that, but just kind of gradually, slowly redirect that.
Nice. Good, you guys.
Well, we actually have some similar stories from the field. We had one guy over one time. John, that was, one of the maintenance guys on the compound that we were on. And it's pretty rare that locals come to your house to eat, but we were pretty open. So anyway, this guy came, and as long as you keep offering him food, he just kept eating. He looked like he'd roll him out.
I don't know if he even liked it or wanted it, but I had it, so he kept
eating. Well, he liked it.
Yeah, and that is a cultural expectation of if someone offers you food in some countries, it's offensive to reject it. So,
and some of you know my wife's name, and often we make suggestions as to what you name the new baby.
Oh.
So I'd always write it out on a card and say, well, this is a really good name. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of Toronzas over in New Guinea.
Very nice.
And all right. We had one that wanted to, he wanted school fees. He named his granddaughter Toronza.
So then I was supposed to
pay for it, yeah. Yes, yeah, that makes sense. Very nice. All right, we'll go to this group back here. Yes.
Well, I think first you have to be realistic and find out what the culture actually does before you invite people into your home. Because what we do and what they do are totally different. And if you're in their country, you need to know what to expect to start with. And then, because if that's their way and you are uncomfortable with it, then you need to not do, invite people in, or let them be known ahead that you're not comfortable with that part of their culture. And, you know, if you don't want to do it, then, you know, it's not that we don't want you to come to dinner, but we just don't like the intrusion.
All right, what about you guys?
We unfortunately had the same as the first, so kind of let them get it out of their system, though I did like some of the redirecting.
Here's a nice little sprinkle on top.
That's a good idea.
All right, group in the back.
So distract and redirect. Okay, let's go get a Coke. That culture typically doesn't gather inside people's homes anyway.
Right.
So just move out.
That's a good point. So these missionaries have now been on the field for over 10 years. They've been in two different countries with very similar cultures in Asia. And when they talk about this, they're like, yeah, so we just were stunned and actually did nothing because we didn't know how to handle that. And they were like, and we were overthinking the culture and the honor shame. And they were like, we didn't want to ruin relationships. And it was a hard context for missionaries to be in. And we so valued that they were in our, you know, we wanted to invest in that and all the right things, right? But they said, they were like, in hindsight, real authentic relationships, we could have found a way to like honestly communicate, hey, can you not go in the bedrooms? Like, they're like, because actually, like, we kind of just felt like in missions we had to let go of all of our expectations and boundaries. And there is a reality of that. You're stepping into another culture, and that is part of servanthood, is being willing to sacrifice some of those things and allowing God to shape your view and change your view on some of those things. But there are also other things that it's okay to be like, actually, I'm not that comfortable with that, and I love you enough to tell you that. And there's a way to say that that's not as direct as what I just said. But they just were like, yeah, we probably should have communicated, hey, let's stay in the living room. Like, so that was kind of their solution to that. So, any questions on global missions? Anything I've talked about?
I want to know who those missionaries are.
I can't say their name when I'm being recorded because of where in the world they are. But they're awesome. So.
Do they still have self-supported missionaries in some countries?
Yeah, so actually a couple of years ago, we switched how we do our funding, and now actually all of our missionaries do deputation and fundraising. And part of that is because we want our missionaries to be connected to local churches, and we want our churches to be praying for them, to be walking with them, to be on that journey with them, no matter what their position on the mission field is. So self-funded, it's really like church-funded, but it is them doing the deputation and speaking and relationships and fundraising throughout that process.
We had a self-support boarding church. The church supported itself, but it still had to be called a missionary church in Japan because it had to have the word missionary on it or it would be illegal.
I can't speak to that specific context. I know that our ministries in Japan have evolved a lot over the years, and
it's been a long time ago, but we had to go through all kinds of hoops, but we had to keep the, even though the church supported itself.
Yeah, I would say I'm pretty sure that would be different just because in Japan currently as a whole, that culture is not super friendly to missions. You can talk about that we're there, but it wouldn't be a strategic move for us to put missionary on a church name right now. So,
with regard, you guys still use the Convio account thing?
The what?
Convio account.
I'm not familiar with what that is, so probably not.
Well, that's the way they do it.
Well, that was 12 years ago.
Okay. For us, that's
helpful. But there's a lot of online giving.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, our missionary giving is largely online. Yeah. So, yes.
We're asking about our Links missionaries, and on the bottom, Mary Bess, please be creative and careful with your words.
If we write to
can you get a little specific on that?
Yeah, so have you guys heard the phrase, like, Christianese? Anybody heard that? So it's something that we talk about in the U.S., and it's like we say words like seasons and growing and faith and like all of these words that a non-Christian is like, what are you talking about, seasons? Like, you mean the like weather changing? But as Christians, there are all these words that we say all the time that are very like faith-based words, even if they aren't the word Christian. And so one of the things that we do is, and this is something for a lot of our missionaries in general that are in more sensitive contexts or contexts that aren't just as open to open conversations of Christianity, is just thinking through the words you're saying of, does someone who's not a Christian at all know what I'm talking about? And does it resonate with them? And so I say that to say, taking out anything explicit about church. So like we have missionaries in some Creative Access World areas now that they can't be in any WhatsApp groups or text messages with churches or anything like that. And so anytime we communicate with them, we communicate about their job, like their actual job in country. And we don't express anything about financial support. There's nothing of that. It's more of, how's your day going? And how's your family? And it's kind of orienting to those conversations that wouldn't raise a red flag for anyone. Any other questions? Yes.
This is kind of an off-the-wall question, but is there any effort to help build economically, like impoverished areas or anything like that, like through microenterprises, anything like that, any missionary efforts that support things like that?
Yeah, I would say that is really what a lot of that sphere is Nazarene Compassionate Ministries. So they have various projects that help women coming from hard situations, you know, have a job and space in society. They do various projects in communities with sustainability, economically, with food, all that sort of stuff. They work with agriculture and farmers in some of those contexts. NCM is a branch of Global Missions, and so I'm not the best person to give a lot of in-depth, but you can find on our websites information about specific projects NCM does, and a lot of them would be in that sphere of community development as well. Well, thank you guys for letting me share with you today. I hit you with a lot of information really quick. We have a beautiful big church that has amazing missionaries and amazing ministries. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me. And I would also just encourage you to, I talked today a lot about the different things missionaries can do and what calling can look like. And I showed some screens that really showed that you can come from anywhere and be sent to anywhere, that God can use people from all around the world. But I just encourage you, as you go throughout your day, as you go throughout your life and your own discerning process, maybe just keep a really open heart to what God might be speaking to you in regards to your missions journey. But also, for those of you who are really planted where you are and you know this is where you're called to be, just keep a listening ear for if you hear maybe young people in your church that just have a little bit of a holy interest in culture or missions, and maybe press into that and invite them to pray about that and think about, what might God be saying to me with this? So I think as leaders, we have a really unique opportunity to invite other people to think about, oh, that really interests you? Like, have you prayed about that, what that means? And maybe it means that they support a kid through NCM and a child sponsorship. And maybe it means that they serve locally. Or maybe it means that God's planting seeds that the local church can help grow and invite in that conversation. So I would just encourage you guys to lead with that posture as you interact. And thanks so much for letting me share with you today.